Hey guys, it's me, Camille.
And me, Tim. And we want to take you all the way back to a little more than a year ago when we brought you an episode called Black Girl Magic.
Some of you diehards probably remember this one. It was about, well,
magical black women.
Yeah. Who also just happened to be one of the fastest growing groups of entrepreneurs in the U.S.
Even though they get a tiny, and we mean like tiny little sliver of financial backing and investments.
But they keep making it work, hence the magic part.
Yeah.
And there are lots and lots of programs around the country trying to address this gap.
But few have tackled the problem like a consortium here in St. Louis nicknamed The Collective.
Welcome to the first official meeting of the funded St. Louis Equity Entrepreneurship Collective.
Members of the collective, which is made up of like the who's who of St. Louis's business world, say they're not focusing on short-term fixes.
Nah, they plan to enact systemic changes that will infuse more women and people of color into the region's entrepreneurship ecosystem, which, like everywhere else, is largely white and largely just a bunch of dudes, pretty much.
Just a bunch of dudes.
Yeah.
So they're doing everything from data collection to trying to get consensus in a place known for its divisions.
And that's something that the main person behind this initiative, Natalie Clay, acknowledged in the group's very first official meeting.
Which we should note happened in December 2016.
Now that this is like a thing that's real, I think it probably is worth us stepping back and just reminding ourselves, like, what is it that Natalie put in all those emails about what we said we were going to do? And, like, can we actually do that? And, like, what is the timeline? And given all of that, thinking about how we move forward for next year. Because, as a lot of you know, the end of the year is coming very soon. And as I really mapped out what we said we were going to do over 2 years, I said to myself, well, who decided we were going to do all of that? It's a lot to do in 2 years. So with all that being said, I am going to kick our friends from We Live Here out, if that's okay.
Oh,
yeah, I know.
I have to say that was one of the most positive meetings I've ever been kicked out of.
They were very positive.
Especially, like, yes.
They're all smiling when they when they ushered us out.
Right. And, you know, like, a lot of the time, especially because we were like, more like daily, like, real journalists before we did this show.
Remember the time? Yeah.
And you would get kicked out of meetings, but it would always be like the meetings were like, ooh.
Yeah.
They're serious. But
you realize why you were getting kicked out. Or if you were getting kicked out, you were going back to be like, the law says you can't kick me out.
Yeah.
Anyway, this wasn't that type of meeting.
No more shop talk.
No more shop talk. But anyway, after we got kicked out, we promised you guys that we would return to this topic. Spoiler alert, the group is still chipping away at these goals, and their deadline isn't up yet.
But we do kind of have a bit of a follow-up.
Yeah, because after we went to that meeting and after we put the story out into the world, it reached a very special set of ears.
And it helped one young woman launch herself into entrepreneurship.
So, on today's episode, today's bonus episode.
Bonus.
You're going to hear that
woman. What did we call it? TNK? There was a name we had.
Oh, we did. Last bonus. Guys, we can't remember. TNK bonus episode?
We'll think about it. Let's just get to the bumper. Yeah.
So, on today's episode, you're going to hear that woman's journey from worker bee to boss of her own company.
And how our little tiny podcast here in St. Louis had something to do with it. From St. Louis Public Radio and PRX, this is We Live Here, a show for people somewhere on the woke spectrum.
Are you expecting me to pick up? Oh, okay.
What was the name of that thing again?
I don't know. If you live in or have visited St. Louis, it's hard to ignore the fact that healthcare is huge here.
Right. It's not uncommon in certain parts of the city just to see huge groups of people walking around in scrubs and sometimes those funny little hats.
Just funny little hats. It's like the paper ones.
They're not really funny. I'm sure that they serve a very serious purpose.
Very serious hats.
Just goofballs in general. Yes. Yeah. But there's like a sort of a consolidated group of medical schools that attract students from all over the world in just sort of a main part of St. Louis.
Mm-hmm. And there's also tons of people who work at hospitals, which Speaking of the hospitals,
they're big.
They're massive.
Mm-hmm.
So massive that it's easy to get lost in them.
We did.
So what wing are we in?
I think we're in like a separate wing of the building, of the hospital. Center for Advanced Studies or something.
Okay.
I think we have another building to find.
Gotcha.
Let's get out of this building. Sure. Oh, look. Okay, this is going now.
It's not going well.
Not well. Mm-mm. But finally, we seem to get on the right path. Is this the second floor?
Second floor, yeah.
For children's? Okay, we're here to meet Rachel Simon Lee.
And this is who we're looking for, Rachel Simon Lee. She's the reason we're in this gigantic Barnes Jewish Hospital campus in the city's very, very posh Central West End.
Yeah, and after a few more turns, we finally see Rachel waiting for us near a security desk.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey. We don't know where we are.
Hey, we don't know.
We have no idea.
We parked on the, what garage was that?
I don't know, the big one?
Yeah.
Even Rachel can't believe our wandering trek.
We took the scenic route. So how did y'all get through?
Well,
we just walked?
Yeah, just walked through the...
From where?
From
I don't
what
know.
Garage? It's the garage.
That is hilarious.
Timbuktu.
No.
Like,
okay.
We walked about 2 miles.
The hospital.
Welcome.
You
look legit.
Yeah,
guys, Rachel's also pretty legit. She leads the marketing for the hospital's pediatric heart center. And she's also the founder of Heartwork Videos, a year-old startup that produces surgical videos for doctors.
And we first heard about Rachel this past winter from Natalie Clay, who, if you remember, is the person in charge of this big group called The Collective.
In fact, Natalie insisted we meet Rachel and hear her story. And we thought, we need to get out of the office, man. Getting ready for season 4, guys.
Mm-hmm.
We've been holding up. it's just time for a field trip.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so Rachel is teasing us about our poor directional skills, which, I mean, it's fair enough. Yeah, but we had to return the favor when we got to her cubicle.
I like this picture of you in scrubs with the video camera.
So that's a bunny suit.
Okay.
Bunny suit.
Yeah, so if you don't have scrubs or if you want to just run in and out of the OR, there's a limit on it, I think like 25 minutes. But it's a sterile piece of equipment that you can wear. So you can run into the OR and be in a sterile environment. It's called a bunny suit because it's white and it's a onesie.
It makes you look like a bunny.
And it makes you look like a bunny.
Oh.
And I was, this was when I first got here in 2011.
Rachel doesn't have to physically duck into ORs as much anymore. Technology has taken care of that. But she still keeps a close eye on what's going on.
Because in addition to marketing, she's kind of found a little role at the hospital where she makes recordings of procedures for the doctors. And that means she watches a lot of heart surgeries.
Are we going to look at some stuff that's going to make me kind of like grossed out?
Probably.
Okay,
I'm
let's
so
do
excited.
It. Let's just do this.
So I'm just going to go ahead and push pause on this part of our show and just mention that, like, Camille was pretty geeked out. About the prospect of watching hours of open heart surgery.
Yeah, I can't deny it, guys.
It's a little.
I'm totally into it.
It's cool. I mean, I think it's cool. I was not prepared for it. I don't think.
Yeah. As Rachel swung around to her computer monitor, she scanned an email from one of the heart center's doctors because he wanted her to send him footage of a recent heart surgery he performed.
Basically. He said, Rachel, I need to see a video of the arch reconstruction using antegrade descending cannulation. So,
wow. Yeah. break it down just real quick.
So, let's see. What is the... So, the diagnosis was double outlet right ventricle. And they wanted to see how they did the arch reconstruction. Because, they're in the OR. They have to make... sometimes very quick but educated decisions on what they're going to do because the echo and the CT can only show you so much. You're not
like when you open the hood kind of thing.
Exactly.
You can really see what the problem.
You got to figure out what you're going to do.
Yeah.
And so when they get in there and you have an aorta that is very, very small, you have to figure out how you're going to reconstruct it. And so they did that in the OR, but when they got out, your memory is only as good as you know.
Mm-hmm.
So they said, you know, we need to look at it. We need to see what we did.
And I'm sure with like adrenaline and stuff.
Oh, yeah. Like, you're
gonna.
It's like it's like having game film almost. Like that.
It's exactly like that. Yeah. So when I applied, he called it quarterback reviews.
Yeah, yeah, it's totally the same idea.
As we continue watching, Rachel dictates, pointing out the steps the surgeon takes to manipulate veins in the child's pried apart chest.
So this is the raw footage.
I'm slightly grossed out, but I'm also just
intrigued?
Like,
that's good. So
I'm geeked.
This is just me being a nerd. This is not HD, and I hate that it's not HD. We have to. I'm gonna show you what
that's
an HD camera looks like.
That's the first thing I was
like.
Thinking too. Was like,
this is amazing,
but I don't know about the resolution on this one.
I know. Oh, I only care about that. Okay, so here. He's isolated all of the vessels. So they want to get to, so this cannula, this is a cannula right here, and this provides the cardiopulmonary bypass.
What's that? What are those blue little, those little things?
Yeah, so he's isolating the vessels. So it's
like a rubber band.
Tourniquet kind of
ligature. Oh, okay, I got you.
Thing.
Okay.
Yeah. So you wrap it around, and that way when they start to do things, they can pull on that to push things out of the way to secure it in place. And so I look and I find, okay, so clip I through N are what I really need. So this is towards the end of the arch reconstruction.
Is that him literally closing the hole? Like,
so actually, I'll show you. So then I download all the clips that I need, specifically for this type of project, because he needs to see the raw. He needs to see everything except for when he looks away from the field of vision. Mm-hmm. He needs to see exactly what he did. So I give him a longer video in this particular case than something that he used to teach. So I download it, and then I go into my program. I use Final Cut, and then I'd import all of the clips, and then I'd edit everything, and then I give him this.
This are custom videos often used by students or other heart surgeons wanting to improve their skills. And they're in big demand.
So much so that it gave Rachel, a 30-something who had no medical training or background, a big idea. And that is coming up right after this stuff. Rachel's not just good at this whole video editing thing because of her experience at the hospital. In fact, she went to school for this.
Yeah, because her original plan, you know, when you're like a kid,
mm-hmm.
was to go into, get this, our line of business.
And when she told us this, we were like, I'm not gonna diss my profession or my career or my life choices. That's for later off. Away from the microphone.
But let's just say we told her maybe you made the right choice.
It might be a good call. Not for everyone.
Not for everyone.
That's a nice way of saying it.
So then when did you decide, like, oh, maybe not broadcast journalism?
When Linda Williams, one of my teachers, said, typically what you have to do is go to a very small town in Arkansas or Mississippi and start there, and you're going to be there for a couple of years, and then you go to a smaller town or not a smaller town, but a slightly larger town in another really small city.
Climb the ladder kind of
and
thing.
And I was like, I don't think I want to do that.
Yeah.
So after graduation, Rachel's mentor spots an internship opening at Barnes Jewish Hospital, and he tells her, you got to go for it.
So she does, and she works at the hospital in the communications and marketing department doing whatever they tell her to do.
Mm-hmm. And honestly, I don't even know how long the internship was. I just wanted to work hard and I wanted to impress them.
Mm-hmm.
And towards the end of the year, there was talk about a new pediatric CT surgeon. They said, do you want to learn how to read surgeries and do some video production for this surgeon?
And I said, yeah.
I met him, Dr. Peruz Egdesadi. Awesome, awesome man. And we hit it off.
And this new surgeon, who came from Ohio, had some ideas about how things could be done at Children's.
the word around the hospital is that Peruse is a big idea person. And mm-hmm. it's true. Like, he's always thinking of ways to improve, ways to make things better, thinking outside of the box. And they had started creating an instructional video library in Cincinnati. He handed me this disc of a video and said, do this.
Right.
And this was what year?
2011-12. So I started in 2011, December. And so, you know, 2012, it was like hitting the ground running. He said, here's a textbook. Here are the cases that we typically do. And, you know, here's the setup that we have in the OR for filming cases.
So for many people, I'm just going to go ahead and say most people, being told by one of the country's top pediatric heart surgeons to create instructional videos, when you yourself haven't gone to med school, I mean, it's kind of like, it's a little daunting, don't mm-hmm. you think? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Even if you are getting study guides. But Rachel, she embraced it.
What I was doing made a difference to him, and it made a difference in the lives of the families. So I knew that it was special. I knew there was something special about it. And so I just pushed myself and challenged myself to be better and to be faster. And the only way that I could do that was to do it every single day. And that's what I got to do.
So you did that every single day for how long?
I did that every day. I mean, I still do it, so I don't do it every day. But, you know, in theory, for about 4 to 5 years.
Wow.
And so when did I work here, I feel useful, this is cool, I got this cool job.
Mm-hmm.
When did that turn to, oh, maybe I have some sort of, I'm feeling like an entrepreneurial bug bit me?
Yeah, so one of the doctors there was creating an iBook. He was writing a textbook for congenital heart disease, for cardiothoracic surgery, pediatric cardiothoracic surgery, and he wanted to take it to the next level. He just didn't want it to be all text. He wanted to add echocardiograms, and he wanted to add operative video. And so he was a part of our service line at the time, part of our team, and I would work with him on getting some videos in his book. But my workload at work was too heavy, and so I had to do it on my off time. And so since I was doing it on my off time, he was, you know, willing to pay me for, mm-hmm. you know, for my services. And I thought it was so cool. I was like, man, maybe I'm going to be published one day. And now I am. And I was making money.
Rachel started to wonder if there was a market for this sort of thing.
Yeah, if other doctors besides the ones at her hospital would find it useful to have their own surgery videos, sort of like a game tape, if you will.
After all, these days, a lot of doctors record their work in the OR anyway, but then don't have the skills or the time to make hours of surgery tape useful.
So maybe, Rachel reasoned, they could use a video editor too. Maybe they could use her.
She floated the idea to her bosses in October 2016.
And I told them, and they were really supportive. And they said, so you just want to freelance and you just want to try to get some more clients? And I said, yeah, I want to see if anybody's, you know, interested in this.
So that's cool, though, too, because they were like, you know, you can keep your day job, right. basically, yeah. and start this side thing, too.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and that was it.
Still, even though Rachel's not one to do things in small order, she needed a little push.
Which is, unbeknownst to us, how we come into this whole story.
And so my what if was when I heard Black Girl Magic on your podcast. And I thought, you know, I can build a Squarespace website. I can sit in my basement. I can sit in my room and be quiet and build and think and write a whole bunch of notes on a Google Doc. But, you know, can I really put myself out there, talk to people, get advice, get criticism, and, you know, pivot and read books and persevere and read more books and pivot and, you know, do all that stuff that I hear about? Can I do that? And when I heard the podcast and I heard Morgan talk about Blavity and talk about, you know, the steps that she made, even though the subject matter was, you know, about funding and, you know, that sort of thing, I was thinking, you know, I could do this. Mm. I really can. So I reached out to Dr. Cheryl Watkins Moore.
You're totally making our day right now.
Oh, that's so cool. That's so cool.
It's so true. It awesome. Is so true.
This is like such a pick-me-up. So
yeah.
Cool. Yeah.
Okay, but enough about that.
Yeah.
Go on.
Go
back. So back to your story. So tell us about this call that you had with...
Yeah. Or it was an email.
Okay, it was an email.
Yeah.
So I immediately Googled her, and her title was... Director of Diversity and Inclusion, the Diversity and Inclusion Initiative for BioSTL. And so I read her bio like 3 times. And I said, you know, she's a woman, she's Black, and she's a doctor. I think she might like me.
Yeah.
So let me give this a shot.
Right.
And so her email was on the website. And I just said, you know, hi, Dr. Watkins Moore. My name is Rachel Simon Lee. I have this business, Heartwork Videos. I'm really interested in learning how to be a better business person or something like that. And she went and checked my LinkedIn. You know how they do, you know.
You got the notification. Yeah.
Right, I got that notification that she checked it. I was like, okay, that's a good sign. And she emailed back, if not that day, the following day, that, yes, we need to get you into this entrepreneurship ecosystem.
So you guys can probably guess at this point what happened next.
Rachel killed it.
Of course. No, really.
Yes,
this
she
woman,
did.
She had a great year.
Mm-hmm. After hearing the show and connecting with Cheryl, who's also, we should say, a big part of the collective, that giant group of the who's who of business people in St. Louis who are figuring out ways to make its entrepreneurship ecosystem more inclusive.
Mm-hmm.
This is why I'm not a spokesperson for those things. I can't get entrepreneurship out of my mouth. Well,
I'm not even going to try. Mm-mm. Anyway, after making this connection, Rachel enrolled in local classes. And then she won several pitch contests for new startups, and she steadily built her client list. So along the way, have you kept in touch with Dr.
Moore? Oh, my gosh, yes.
Okay. What has that meant to you, too? Yeah.
You know, it's... We can't do this by ourselves. And what I mean by we is specifically women and women of color. And I think that fictive kinship that, you know, was that Melissa Harris Perry and, or was that Michelle Alexander?
I think it's Michelle Alexander.
One of those dynamic Black women. Mm-hmm. I read that book too. Mm-hmm. It's almost like I knew she saw something in me. She saw the potential in me. She saw that I wanted to work hard. She thought that the idea was a good idea, but I just needed to be guided in the right direction. And she didn't know me from Adam or Eve. And she didn't have to do anything to help me. But not only did she help me that one time, she kept following through. You ever had that feeling where you know something is about to take off? You know that it's about to happen, and you know that you're in the right place at the right time? That's how I feel. I wake up in the morning, and I want to go to work and do a really good job at work, but I want to get home so I can work on hard work. Because I know that the more people know about it, the more that we can help surgeons be better surgeons. I remember talking to one of our partners in the office, Dr. Barbanel, and I said, if you had access to your cases almost immediately after you came out of the operating room so that you can review and study, and then you can use that to teach other trainees, you know, what kind of value does that provide? He said, oh, I'd be a better surgeon, hands down. Hmm. And I said, that's it.
That's your value.
That's it. I have to do this. There's no question.
Where's sort of the, how close do you feel like you're at to sort of that breaking point where you're like, this is not my promising side gig. This is like my full-time gig.
Yeah. That is it's going to be a hard decision to make. And I think it's kind of like whenever you make a big decision in life, you know, getting married or buying a house or anything like that, you know when you know. Mm. I will say I'm very close. I'm very close. I've been super transparent with my job the whole way. I don't think I could have done it any other way. I appreciate them. I think it probably took me a longer time to even start hard work because I actually enjoy my job and I enjoy the people that I work with. But I've told them about it and they've always been very supportive of it. So when it comes, it's not going to be a shock to anybody. It'll be hard to leave. But I know that it's coming.
You know, there's a strong likelihood that perhaps another Rachel out there, you know, is listening to this show. You know what I mean? Somebody who's maybe in your position when you listened in 2016. What would you tell? I mean, what advice would you give?
No one knows what they're doing. There is no blueprint. You cannot do it the wrong way. You have to believe in yourself. You have to believe in the idea, in the concept. And you have to surround yourself with good people, with knowledgeable people, with people that are going to push you, people that are not going to just hand you things. And you have to be willing to sacrifice your nights, your weekends, your money, all your free time, if you truly believe in it. And I mean, in the true sense of paying it forward, if there's something that I said that could possibly help you, or if any way you think I can help you, let me know. Because I mean, that's how I got here. So there would be no way that I wouldn't want to help someone else, you know, make their idea just blossom.
That was just cool.
That was such a fun story.
I know. It's like a...
Not just because we're in it.
No, I'm not saying just because...
But kind of.
I mean, it doesn't hurt.
It doesn't hurt. I mean, indulge us a little bit, guys. So we put out this show, and we send it out into the world. And sometimes we don't know what happens.
We have no idea what happens to it.
And we wouldn't have known what had happened to Rachel if we hadn't ran back into Natalie Clay and been like, hey, what's up with the collective? Full circle. Full circle.
Really beautiful thing.
Beautiful.
So We Live Here is produced by me, Tim.
And me, Camille.
Alana Sistrunk is our associate producer extraordinaire.
Yes, and Robert Peterson is our boss.
He's a program director here at St. Louis Public Radio. And from St. Louis Public Radio and PRX, this is We Live Here.
Support for this podcast comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
From PRX.